Ryan McClain. Dick Coach's Corner.
You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer.
For someone to explain.
Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode number 48 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plymer, and joining me today is Simon Thomas. Simon is the head of physical performance at the BNZ Crusaders in Super Rugby and has been a full-time S&C coach in rugby for 10 years. He's had involvements with the Tasman Makos, Canterbury Academies, NPC teams, and two under-20 World Cup championships with New Zealand. He began his career as a volunteer with the Crusaders in 2005 and now heads up the physical performance program, consults across various rugby teams, sports and businesses, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Simon.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So obviously you're coming off a fairly awesome year with the Crusaders, but before we get into that, what's a bit of a background of you as an athlete, and then how it kind of transferred into getting into the strength and conditioning industry or profession?
Well, for me, I played a whole lot of sports from a young age, but obviously growing up in New Zealand, rugby's a big one, and I certainly played that from right when I first could. I only really played to a sort of a medium sort of level and club and representative, and not to a high level, and didn't take me too long to realise that my calling was still within the sport, but not as a player. I lived in Ireland for a year after school, and I was involved with the Munster under-21 set up as a player over there, and that's when I sort of got a first look at sort of a more professional or performance environment.
Sweet.
And for me, I sort of looked at that, and then came back home to New Zealand to study, and initially was thinking physio, but then I saw a bit of an opportunity or an opening in the S&C side of things, and that sort of spun my wheels a little bit more, because I knew I'd be able to remain in sport somehow if I went down that path. And they were the sort of things I really connected with while I was studying as well. So I was pretty fortunate when I shifted to Nelson. The degree that I completed was set up in the time that I was there, and I got to do a lot of hands-on time and experience in and around the Crusaders and with Tasman Makos when they were set up sort of at the same time. So I guess it's sort of one of those cases of being in the right place at the right time when things were happening, and then just working hard and taking opportunities when they came up, really. So I've been pretty fortunate to have a reasonably sort of a linear pathway, which doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
Staying sort of within one franchise and working my way through the different levels of that sort of as a player would as well. So often, you know, the opportunity comes up somewhere else, and you sometimes come back around to where you started, and you sometimes end up, you know, way off somewhere else. So it's been quite unique and fortunate for me to stay aligned in different parts of kind of one franchise and always be keeping in touch with it. And now I'm fortunate enough to be leading that program, and that definitely helps with leading the program, having worked in all the different parts of it on the way through, having that understanding of what the other levels of this program need, and helping those who are in those spots now. Mm. They're just really enjoying sinking my teeth into leading the program this year, and looking to grow it as much as I can into the future.
Yeah, well, you've probably got a really good, you know, finger on the pulse of what makes the Crusaders so good. You know, like they're, you know, the most successful franchise in Super Rugby and arguably the world. What do you think some of the main reasons are for that?
We chatted about that this year. You know, up until this year, we hadn't had a lot of success for quite a while. So we'd come close a couple of times and missed. And that's the thing about this organisation. You know, success is measured in winning titles, and we hadn't done that for quite a few years. So that and producing internationals. So, but I guess internally, we'll still measure our growth and development as like an unseen success. So we know when we're doing things well, even if a particular bounce of the ball or something doesn't go your way and you don't get the result. But our supporters and our sponsors are on board with us to win titles, and that's what we're here for too. So, I guess the having a good understanding of where sort of some of the early success for the Crusaders kind of came from. And I think that was really built on a group at that time, just really buying into and believing in a common purpose and building an environment and a culture. And our sort of our recent success, you can put down to something really similar. Yeah. I think we probably, and it wasn't just a 2017 thing. In the last sort of 2 or 3 years, we've really opened up to shifting the focus from carrying on a legacy of the past to the current group building one of their own. And we've seen that in recent years when the Chiefs built and invested in growing a culture of Chiefs mana, and they got some great success in back-to-back tops. Sure. The Highlanders built their brotherhood concept and won a title off the back of building a culture and environment. The Hurricanes have done it in their own way. You look at the Lions over in South Africa, and they're a team that you see have a real culture and environment around their people that shows when they play on the field, and they've all bought into trying to achieve a common purpose and heading in the same direction. And that's sort of what we wanted to get back to, is actually let's try and grow something ourselves, because when people invest in it, that's when it'll really grow and lead to success, or have a higher chance of that than trying to carry on something of the past that's not necessarily the legacy of the people who are there at the time. So I think that's probably played a pretty big part in it. From the physical side, we've always been based on a decent running base. Crusaders have been built on a running base, and that hasn't changed yet, and probably won't change for quite a while unless the game changes. So that's definitely a constant, and the values of the organisation and how the different parts of the program align to those is probably a real strength, I think.
Yeah. Keep going.
Oh, I was going to say, having a bunch of All Blacks helps too, if you can get them.
No
all
doubt.
And getting in the right direction. Like, we're pretty fortunate with our playing group and our coaches and the other support staff. We're pretty blessed with what we've got and what we've been able to, I guess, inherit in terms of the culture and the environment. But the fact that we're trying to grow it is probably what's had the most significant impact.
Yeah, and the fact that you have so many All Blacks says a bunch about what's been done before, 5, 6, 7 years before that those players have come through the system and have them blossomed into, world-class players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're fortunate that we've got a really good recruitment and development structure. So we've definitely got Crusader All Blacks who are born and bred in Christchurch and the wider, Crusader region. But we've also got guys who have, they've been recruited into our area, either in Tasman or Canterbury, after school, and then developed through our academy process. And so there's a really good development structure there, and you can't bring them all through and you can't give them all jobs. And so guys end up becoming Highlanders and Chiefs and Hurricanes, and that's just the reality. But we're definitely fortunate with the hit rate and the success rate of our academy in terms of developing Crusaders and All Blacks, and that comes to picking the right people and then just putting the right things in around them.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously an awesome season this year, winning the Super title over the Lions in South Africa. Also a pretty amazing year for New Zealand rugby as well, with the British and Irish Lions tour. What were some of the challenges this season with those kind of, the long Super title, long Super Championship, and also the Lions coming on tour, and how did you approach those challenges?
Yeah, it was definitely an enjoyable campaign start to finish. I think we identified what we wanted to achieve right at the beginning, and everybody played their part in that, from players right through management and the rest of the staff in the organisation. So we knew what we wanted to do and how we wanted to go about it, and everybody stayed on board with that. And the reality is we were going to have All Blacks involved in a Lions tour in the middle of the season. So that was always there, and you just have to accept and acknowledge those things and find the best way to work around it. And that comes from, that's kind of the main challenges we share players between the All Blacks and the Crusaders. And so they enter the preseason late because they've been on an end-of-year tour and they need a mental break. And then there's always an international window, and when it's a Lions series, it's a big thing. So that just takes really good communication and alignment between ourselves and the staff with the All Blacks. And most things within New Zealand rugby are really well driven to producing successful All Blacks. And then we have our ways that we want to achieve success within our campaign as well. And I guess it's coming to the realisation that those two things don't need to happen in isolation. And we need to set the same goals with the same player between us. So we have really good communication between ourselves and the All Black staff. And, you know, they're not telling a player to be 5Ks heavier than we're telling them. And we're talking constantly around that and making sure that the player just gets one message, because what makes them an exceptional All Black will make them an exceptional Crusader and vice versa. So as long as we sort of manage any individual things with that player throughout the year, there's no reason why they can't be at their best when it's needed, which is both for us and for the All Blacks. So I think the communication and the alignment between the staff and those two setups is probably the critical part there, especially when you have as many of those players as we do. And then those individuals being invested in that process and talking to them and having them on board. So they understand that it's about them and we're helping them achieve what they want to achieve in both jerseys. And then that we're both, or all three parties are on the same page around how we're actually going to try and achieve that. The reality of that June test window is it interrupts the Super Rugby campaign and it interrupts momentum in a lot of different areas, but it's a reality of the current season. So everybody gets hit by it. You've just got to be the best at negotiating and managing it for what suits you. So until the season changes in a couple of years and it's a little bit more clear cut and Super Rugby goes until international season starts.
Yeah.
I think this probably 2018 is probably the last year of that. I don't know if there's just one day during a World Cup year. So I think those key principles also help in things like World Cup year when there's a pretty big carrot at the end of it, to make sure that, you know, that the two things actually go hand in hand. They're not competing.
So it's really interesting what you're saying there. Like it's you know, one of the things you hear a lot about with New Zealand rugby is that it's a centralised model, that it's, you know, for want of better words, top down, that yep. NZRU is in constant communication with the super franchises and, you know, everyone's singing from the same song sheet. Do you think that's has proven to be a big advantage for New Zealand rugby in the past couple of years?
Yeah, well, it's definitely fit. It's definitely fit for us. I know the benefits are whenever a player goes into the All Black environment, they come back to us having experienced that high level of understanding of the game, and they've run inside a really good program and they've played at a great level, that they're a better player. Mm-hmm. And then when it goes the other way, I mean, every Super Rugby coach and S&C coach and physio technically work for the All Blacks, because if they go into a test series and they've only got a week to lead into it, if they don't come skillful and fit and injury free from us, then they're not going to perform, you know, in a test match 7 days together. So and so it'll be interesting to see where that goes and how it changes when there are two kind of separate seasons, and you're a Crusader until you become an All Black, and then you're an All Black until you become a Crusader again. Those two windows where players won't be coming and going as much. So I think we'll still, the same alignment and communication will still serve us well, but it'll happen differently, because they won't be flicking between the two programs. You know, they'll have two sort of structures to their year, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see how that adapts. But it's really been something that the way the season's worked has fit for both us and the All Blacks to kind of align that way, because when you've got two players within two different programs, if they're not getting the same message or heading in the same direction, it's just not what's best for the player or either team, really. So the NZRU staff, they do that really well now, and they we stay in pretty constant contact, and we're all, yeah, like I say, singing off the same sheet, really, because it's about the players achieving what they're setting out to do. That is the be all and end all for why we're here, to help and guide them to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, for sure. So back to the Crusaders. Notoriously, they've been pretty poor starters in terms of Super Rugby, but this year you guys put that to bed pretty quickly. What do you think were some of the reasons in the past why the slow start, and this year what were some of the things you tried to change to prevent that?
Yeah, it's a tough question that one is I think if we knew it wasn't a plan to start slowly.
No doubt.
Yeah, if we knew why it was happening, we probably would have fixed it earlier. But it's an odd one. I think I guess some of the things we did differently this year, we had more of a focus on nailing our rugby through the preseason than just nailing the conditioning. Mm-hmm. And the flip side of that was, hey, we're not going to have as much of a heavy conditioning focus in the preseason, but it's never going away. We're not stopping it in February. It's staying for the whole year. And the way you can start the year well, so many teams at Super Rugby level, guys come back to us from the All Blacks or from provincial, having only had 2, 3, 4 weeks off at the most. And they've ticked over physically pretty well because we've worked on plans to do that. So they don't come out of condition. So we don't need to catch them up to speed too much in the preseason, so we can focus on rugby earlier. Mm. And the better your players understand each other and connect with each other and know how to play their game, that can lead to a better start to the season because you don't have the teething issues of trying to figure out how your attack or defence structures are working and things like that. So I think the emphasis on closer to a 50-50 blend of rugby and physical conditioning in the preseason is helpful rather than a physical block in the preseason with not much rugby and then an in-season block of lots of rugby and not much physical conditioning, which in other season models fits and works really well. I think because we don't have to play as much catch-up, like I said as well, we can focus on the rugby earlier, so it becomes... Mm. I mean, when you win, you think, yep, that worked, but you know, we could have done the same and been 0-3 or 0-4, so... Mm. We were pretty close to it. We only just scraped past the Highlanders and the Reds. But when you work smart and you work hard, you increase your chance of those things going your way in the critical moments. And that was something that last year we got on a really good roll. We went into June top of the table, but when it came to critical moments, we didn't nail them, and that's what made the difference. And mm-hmm. So many Super Rugby teams are so even when it comes to the physical preparation, and the pre-season plans are pretty similar, and the players' physical condition is really similar, and the skill level is really similar, and it just comes down to understanding each other and having cohesion and executing the right things at the right moment that makes a difference. So we probably had a real focus on that. Not to say that we didn't work hard in pre-season, because we still got through plenty, because if you don't, then you're on the back foot.
For sure.
But that definitely continued through the early rounds and then onwards through the season as well.
Yeah, like when we were setting up this interview, you talked about, similar to that, that you know, there was a big focus on constant improvement over the in-season conditioning over the 9-month campaign. You know, how did you monitor that, and like, did you set targets for individual players, and was there a testing kind of regime that you went through? What was your role in that process?
Yeah, we did. We sort of revisited our preseason a little bit and thought, rather than getting as fit as possible in the preseason, let's use the preseason period to build some resilience to a higher training load that we'll keep throughout the year, that'll get us fitter as the year goes on, is, mm-hmm. I guess, a way of looking at it. So we structured it in terms of the how we organised the training, or the periodisation, whatever you want to call it. It's driven by the schedule and the draw. So whenever we want to know what a 7 or 8 day turnaround looks like, and what we want to try and achieve in terms of our running targets in that week, and including the game. And then any time we get a 7 day week or an 8 day, we have to get that volume under our belt to keep us going, so that when we do have a short week with a Friday game or a week with international travel and across time zones, and we don't have the front of it to work with, that we can handle that little drop in training load, as long as we load before it and load after it in a smart way. So we've been playing with our own sort of variation and model of some of Gabbett and others' work around the acute to chronic load ratio with our running.
Okay.
In terms of our running volume and our overall training volume, and I guess we sort of assimilate it right throughout the program with the contact loads, our kicking loads, and everything. So we're I'm pretty fortunate. I've got a performance scientist here, and Sean Owen, who's just exceptional in terms of, he gets the game and he gets the questions we're trying to answer. And we use really simple systems to give us a really clear picture of how we want to go about answering that question. So managing individuals, making sure that players get what they need to get out of each week in terms of running volume, repeat speed efforts, collision, and just ensuring exposure to all the different things that we need to get in the week that can appear during game time, and making sure that when travel or short weeks limit our exposure to that, those different things, that we we bank it before we get there, and we top it up again afterwards, but we do it smoothly so we don't have massive spikes in training load or kicking load or collision load or anything like that. So we operate off GPS and then off the game stats that Opta give us around minutes played and collisions in game, and we're sort of constantly just looking at how we want to grow that but also simplify it, so we're only really answering the questions that we want to use to determine how our training weeks will look.
Yeah, and are those questions predetermined, or are they week by week in consultation with the coaching staff?
Yeah, we have a full campaign plan around when we're going to work hard, when we're going to work for longer, when we'll work for shorter, based around what the schedule and the travel and things gave us. Sometimes it's, and that's with the coaches, that's with the medical team. We sort of collaborate, make sure that everybody is on board with the same integrated plan, and then moving forward through that, I guess sometimes we've got to be brave enough to stick to the plan, and other times we've got to be wise enough to adapt it. So it's just trying to get that balance right by talking to our players individually and in terms of the leadership group and how they're tracking, and getting our coaches' feel for how things are going as well. So we sort of try the art and the science sort of operating in tandem, and not let the science drive the program too much, but just, you know, we have our dashboard that we glance at, but we make our decisions by looking out the windscreen and seeing what's in front of us.
Yeah, that's cool. One of the things you also mentioned when we were chatting was performance integration, that there's been a big inclusion of skills and decision-making in the weight room, in the gym, and the goal was to benefit on-field performance. What does that look like if someone was to rock up to one of your gym sessions? What would they see there?
For us, we're trying to take the walls down a little bit. So in a particular performance session where we're just looking to leave every session a better rugby player, not just a better athlete. So our coaches are in the gym. We're really lucky with the space that we've got in terms of having the sort of turf area alongside our gym that our coaches can operate on while our players are lifting. The fact that our coaches buy into what we're trying to achieve there, and I mean they get hands-on time that they wouldn't normally get, really, if on top of the field time that they get with the players. So they're in coaching. It's a creative space. Sometimes it's got a bit of structure to it, and it's a group working with a coach on a small part of our game, whether it's the skill set of a front rower to catch, make a decision whether to carry, give a short ball, or chuck one out the back. Or it might be some individual skill work around offload. You might have a tackle mat in there, or a high jump mat, doing some tackle work on there with the coaches. And it's player-led as well. Look, players bring in tennis balls and basketball hoops, and they kick balls at each other and have to catch with soft hands and shift it on and juggle and come up with different ideas to. Sometimes it's just about increasing hand-eye coordination. Sometimes it's getting more touches on the ball. And sometimes it's working on combinations, our nines working with our hookers on a feed and hook, or working with the eights, and our coaches being in there giving that technical expertise around some of the micro skill stuff that actually makes the game work. And we also open it up. Our medical team are on deck and around our gym sessions and adjusting things for players that need it around anything that's injured or has a niggle, and we try and just break the silos down and have everybody operating to increase performance of the team. So cognitive and mental skills coaches in running decision making or things under fatigue or change of direction decision making, and anything that's really going to improve our performance in the critical moments of the game, so that we leave that building not just stronger, faster or fitter, but a better player, because they're, you know, not just an athlete but a rugby player. So if we can improve their ability to play rugby, they'll be better at it. So
that's cool.
That's the sort of simple way of looking at it, is I'm not too overly concerned about the amount of interference that we might get with strength or conditioning gains, specifically in terms of the rest periods being random, or because the, like sort of say that somebody getting stronger in their squat is going to have a percentage difference to increasing their performance on the field, but not if they still can't catch pass or see what's in front of them.
Yeah.
So the way that all the things work in combination, the little bit that we might lose from the interference instead of just a pure strength program, we gain by developing better players, and your leg strength is only a tiny part of your on-field performance in a game with 15 players running around in different conditions underfoot and overhead and a ref in the middle and crowd noise and all those sorts of things. So it's the little bit of margin for error there I feel is acceptable if we're going to get a better player in those moments that are just so open and chaotic.
For sure. Yeah, and if the coaches are in there, no doubt you've got a breakdancing mat for Scott Robertson.
Yeah, I don't know where he practices. He obviously he does it somewhere, so we've got to...
No, that wasn't just whimsical. That's been done before a few times.
Yeah, he's done it before. You try and get him to do it more often, but he'll only do it when he absolutely has to and you really force him to do it after you win something. So that's good. Cool. Anything that gives the boys something to look forward to, he's got to get there. So, he's great. He creates an environment where... And you can see in the way that he carries himself where people are comfortable being themselves and they don't have to fit a specific mold to be a Crusader. They can bring their own individuality as long as it contributes to the team. And that's a real key thing within a Razor-coached environment is people being comfortable being themselves and bringing the best of themselves. Yeah, and that's not to... say that the previous coaching group didn't do that. We had a real emphasis on that with Toddy and the other boys last year as well around allowing Crusaders to be themselves within this environment. And I think that's something that really pays off.
Yeah, and you guys had worked, you and Scott had worked together with the New Zealand Baby Blacks, is that correct?
I'd worked with Razor for Canterbury. I'd just finished with the under 20s when Razor came on board, but we've worked together for 4 or 5 years. So building a good sort of a high trust relationship,
and we know how
we communicate with each other. We know how each other works and how to compliment each other and when to call each other out and how to do it and challenge each other. So that definitely helps in terms of. When you want to do things a little bit differently and get coaches into the gym or put something in place out on the field, having that trust and that relationship definitely it allows that.
Okay, well, given your experience, you know, not just this super season but the previous ones gone, if you were to start coaching at an amateur club tomorrow, what do you think are some of the methods and takeaways that you could implement straight away without any of the budgetary constraints that most amateur clubs would face?
I think from the physical side of things, I think what we try to do on the first training day of every week is get everybody kind of to the same state, I guess, and without needing GPS and heart rate and measurement, it can be as simple as knowing, you know, who played at the weekend, who didn't, and who played certain minutes, and using that first day to get the balance right around recovering someone who had a big game load and topping up someone who didn't, so that everybody goes into the, you know, the rest of the week having got maximum exposure and haven't missed the boat week by week there. Really, really, really simple methods around that, around game minutes and RPEs and things that we can measure without a whole lot of technology. I think that's... If it's a longer campaign, that becomes really important for guys not falling off the pace if they're not getting game time week in, week out. Also, I think the relationship between the coaches and the rest of the staff, whether it's a small or a large support staff, everybody being aligned to the same goals and the same message. So the trainer doesn't want to have the fittest running team in the comp when the coach wants to play a more physical game where you kick and maul and go set piece to set piece and try and win the physical battle. So having that alignment in the planning becomes really critical to everybody heading in the same direction and singing off the same sheet. And that's just communication and collaboration and planning together. And I think, I guess finally, even, I mean, I'm a I'm biased because I'm a big believer in it, but the way that we run that integrated performance environment is still doable. I think anywhere that you can get some rugby benefit out of the physical sessions and some physical benefit out of the rugby sessions, especially in an amateur club where, you know, your hands-on time is limited. If you, you know, if you have access to a gym and you've got players in there, then either being able to get in and coach with them or at least give them some things to achieve. They're getting a hard hit on the rower and they're questioning each other about their role in a line out, or you know, you're in doing some offload work or some breakdown technical work in between sets, and you know, having kind of communicated with the S&C coach or staff and allowing that to happen and knowing that you're both trying to achieve the same thing and you're on the same page, I think can be doable. And for the S&C coach to really talk to the coach and understand the type of game you're trying to play. And I guess it comes down to who are our cattle? What are our players? What are their strengths? Okay, well, this is the game we need to build around those players that will be effective. And then from that then comes, okay, well, here's how we're going to train the team to play that game with the individuals got. So for the whole management team to go through that process together and have that understanding, I think becomes a critical part. Otherwise it's just a whole lot of pushing and pulling and people sort of fighting for their little chunk of the pie. So I think to be able to integrate rugby into the physical content and physical output and physical goals into the rugby content becomes really important in a program with low resource and low budget. Like I was pretty fortunate to learn, with under 21 sides and club sides and in Tasman with the Marcos, you know, we don't have budgets and we don't have GPS and you don't have access to the things that we have when you're with the Crusaders. But if you've got a group that's trying to do the same thing and you're just doing the simple things well, you know, there's no reason why you can't be just as successful, if not more.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, every chat I have, I take something away from my own day-to-day stuff. And, yeah, definitely there's loads of transferable stuff, money and budget aside, so that's great. Okay, well, if you were listening into a couple of your athletes talking about you as a coach, what are some of the things you'd want to hope to hear from them?
I guess one of the key things for me is that the athletes, they sort of know that my goal is their goal, and you have that understanding of what they're trying to achieve and that we're in that process together. So for them to know that, I guess it's not my, nothing comes through my bias or my own influence or what I get excited about. It's actually, right, what are they trying to achieve? How are we going to go about it? Let's do this together. So I think the coaching side and the leadership of understanding people and how they want to go about where they want to get to and where and how I can help guide that. That would be, I guess you'd sort of want to hear about what people say about your approach. And that can be, you know, adaptable based on the individual and what they really connect with. So I think it's the most thing I'd want to hear is that you know, they feel you have the ability to connect as a coach and allow them to get the best out of themselves by motivating them, but also, you know, encouraging and leading them to motivate themselves in their own way to achieve whatever they're trying to get to.
Okay, cool. And lastly, before we wrap it up, who have been some of the major influences for you in your career, both as, you know, personal contacts that you've had throughout your journey, but also the textbooks that you've read and the training that you've done?
Like most, it's countless really, and it keeps on growing. I think early on, while I was studying in my course, Claire Dallison, who she sort of ran that course, but also a great practitioner, and she worked with Tall Blacks in basketball and also at the Paralympics. And so some of the things you learned from her around nailing the simple things and communicating and connecting with your athletes, and her experiences out of some of the Paralympic stuff around, you know, there's always a way. And it's just around finding the way to achieve what you're trying to achieve that becomes critical. Early on, when I was volunteering and observing with the Crusaders, Ashley Jones was on board here for most of that time. And a good friend and colleague of mine, and we keep in touch, you know, at the moment still, even just around floating ideas, and sort of learned from him to always constantly try to learn and be really open with your information and you know, nothing's really the secret magic remedy. It's about how well you apply it and connect it with what you're trying to achieve with who you've got in front of you. So within the S&C side, there are definitely a couple of strong influences for me, you know, alongside a lot of others that I've either kind of observed or worked alongside. Been fortunate to work with a lot of different coaches who have a lot of different styles. So that's probably the benefit there, is being able to, you know, have someone who's highly creative and somebody else who's really structured about what they do, and find out, you know, how to work with different types of people has been really critical. And you know, I'm just still learning with that every day. We've got a really good blend within our coaching group, Crusaders. So and they're learning to operate with each other, you know, kind of better and better every week and every month, sort of, which is great. And then program wise, I guess you kind of draw a little bit from everywhere and then put your own spin on it. And you know, if you were studying, you'd probably get pulled up for plagiarism, but once you get out and get some practical work, it's kind of what everyone's doing anyway.
Absolutely.
Majorly reinventing the wheel unless they're coming up with some new fad trying to make money. So it's hard to pin down where you kind of pull things from. Like, I've been lucky to go and look at a lot of different environments, and I went to visit Exos and the Athletes Performance Stats, and their structure and the way they went about their sessions and how they put programs together. I took some really good concepts out of that, and obviously the production line type process doesn't perfectly fit with the way that we operate here, but parts of it work really well, and it gives a really good routine and structure. So I'm looking forward to try and get back up there next year or into this year and see how that's evolved. The people I work alongside every day, like our medical team and our science staff and our nutritionists, they kind of, I guess I'm fortunate now to be in a bit of a leadership position where I can kind of draw on them and give a direction on how I want people to, how I want our sports science department to go and where we want it to get to, and then what he comes up with in terms of driving that himself is exceptional. So having those people either side who are still trying to learn and grow and they challenge you becomes really important for me as well, I think.
Yeah, great. All right, fantastic. All right, well, we always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up in New Zealand, who was one of your favourite players to watch?
I was a Canterbury kid, and Andrew Mertens was kicking goals all over the show.
Yeah,
while
for sure.
He was a legend. He was
absolutely.
He was the king of Christchurch while I was running off the embankment those autographs every week. So, and it's pretty cool now, sort of operating at this level, when he's commentating at games and he comes in and around the environment, and he's such a good man just to chat to and have a yarn, and he's pretty funny and pretty laid back, and
he's gives a really pretty good nick too.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure he can probably still kick a ball.
Yeah,
that's
no
for sure.
Doubt.
Yeah, he was the man when I was growing up. So that's who I was writing all my little banners about.
Nah, for sure. And like, even, you know, growing up in Australia, guys like him and Kristen Cullen and the like, just classy rugby players for sure. And what about now? Who are some of the players that you like watching run around?
You guys at the moment, I've really enjoyed seeing some of our young guys come through this year. I call sort of say young. He's still pretty young. Like a Dave Havili, who was with us in mm-hmm. Crusaders. He's just kicking off his career really, but he's played 40 something games to Crusaders, and he's, you know, been recognised to go into an All Blacks squad. So seeing guys like that step up and Richie Mwanga, who's at 10 for us, and mm-hmm. or a Mitch Hunt, who slots in when Richie's not playing. Like the ability of the young guys to be leaders in a group that's stacked full of All Blacks is awesome. And I think there's an environment that sort of allows that for them here, but also the young players come through so well prepared and developed and set up for professional rugby now that I love seeing those guys come through. And that's kind of who I like watching the best. I mean, it's awesome watching a Sam Whitelock go about his business as a leader. Himself awesome as our captain and as a player and a leader within our group. But also just to see some of the young guys pop out. And I think, like, next year, some of the guys who came in this year that got a little taste are really going to grow and really arrive on the scene when they get the opportunity. So that's sort of... That's the stuff I love to see. I always love watching the teams that I work with, so I get to cheer for Canterbury and Tasman now. So, whereas I had to, you know, be the enemy against Tasman for the last 2 years with Canterbury, but now I get to kind of see and cheer for both and help across both programs. So, Yeah, currently it's the young guys that pop out every year that catch your eye. I think they're awesome to watch just arrive and how they cope with the next level when they get there.
Yeah, I think often too it's like they don't know how good they are and can be. So there's that little level of humility there where they're kind of a bit starstruck as well around the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think. Our All Blacks, we're really fortunate with the way that they operate in our environment and not, it's a pretty equal environment when it comes to players being able to contribute and step up and lead. And some players just like to be soldiers and get on with their work, which is cool. But those that, can and are willing to contribute get the opportunity too, which is great.
That's cool. Okay, and what about coaches? Who's a high-profile coach, whether it be rugby or in strength and conditioning, that you respect and like what they're doing?
We've got to keep myself in a job and talk about Razor and myself. Yeah. No, like I said, we've been able to build a pretty good, like a high-trust relationship where we collaborate and work together on things and drive, it's not just the physical side of things, but also the culture and the environment that we want to see here and how much we want to grow, this place that we're working at to be, whenever we happen to move on, better than when we came in. So, you get to work alongside each other every day. So there's a high level of respect there and we sort of enjoy that working relationship that we have. And then off the field, social and good mates as well. So, but aside from that, I think outside high profile coaches, I've got massive respect for all of the coaches that coach, development levels and academies and schools and kids especially, because that's where things start. You don't get players to work with at the elite level if they haven't, been encouraged to enjoy the game when they're kids. So, and every time you get down to help out with a school session or a kids training session, you actually remember how much you have to work on your coaching skill because you work with elite players. It's really easy just to let the wheels spin. And then you've actually got to remind yourself, the world's best All Black needs coaching as well, because he still wants to continually improve, and it's easy to forget that when they're already operating at such a high level. So the guys and the women that are coaching kids in rugby, massive respect for the amount of coaching that you have to do, and you find. Trying to keep the attention span of kids to what you're trying to coach and make it fun, have them want to come back again next week and improve skill levels that haven't been honed for 20, 30 years already. That's sort of definitely a level of coach I've got a massive amount of respect for.
Cool, yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I'm sure those who are listening also appreciate that. And where other people in the grassroots that you appreciate? You mentioned Andrew Goodman at the Makos.
Yeah, I was lucky when I worked with Tasman. Goody was a player, and he was a captain and kind of a leader. He's sort of the talisman of the team and the environment really at the time. And he's someone I've sort of seen as he's growing into an exceptional coach. He's got a teaching background, so he kind of gets the teaching and the coaching side of it and knows how to conduct himself and question players rather than just telling. And you sort of see. Going a long way as a coach if he chooses to go in that direction, just with his ability to learn and grow, and also just how well he conducts himself and operates as a coach already. He gets the game and he also gets the people, and he cares a lot about that team that he's working with. So it's definitely something that it's an environment there where if someone chooses to extend themselves and continue to learn and grow, you get to develop so much in a space where there aren't so many people around you, so you consciously have to try and improve and grow yourself. And having said that, then you move into an environment where there's more resource and more people, and it's more brains to pick and more to learn. So, Goody, he's someone who he's definitely he's coming up as an exceptional coach with a whole lot of promise, I think.
All right, awesome. All right, well, thanks very much, Simon, for coming on the show. Really appreciate you giving up your time and talking about the Crusaders season. It was definitely one for the books, and I'm sure all listeners have gotten a huge amount out of the chat. So I really want to thank you for giving up your time. Cheers.
Yeah, no, thanks. Pleasure to be involved. So, mate, thanks for having me. It's awesome to have the opportunity just to jump on board and sort of spin a couple of yarns and contribute as best I can. And I'll look forward to listening to the others in the future and learning more myself.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. And, yeah, thanks again for coming on.
Cool. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.